If you want to do something that resonates with people, it's got to be authentic. It's about doing you. It's actually about doing the thing that's most quintessentially you, whether that's simple or complex or whatever it is. I do agree that it's something that we should strive for. And I think it's just primarily composed of that being present in the moment and not worrying about what you're trying to achieve in the future, how the past has gone, and being right there with the music, the other musicians, and the crowd.
So here we are with Chris Pandolfi from the Grammy-winning bluegrass group, the infamous String Dusters. Chris, so glad to have you here, man. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Cam.
So for everyone out there listening, Chris here, he's a String Dusters banjo player, but he also has his own solo music and he's got his own podcast, Inside the Musician's Brain. So yes. He's no stranger to this medium. But anyways, Chris, zooming out, we really haven't had too many bluegrass musicians on this show. And I think it'd be awesome to start this off just talking about the bluegrass style of playing and specifically what you think makes great bluegrass music, great bluegrass, but more really just what about bluegrass has drawn you to it?
Yeah, it's a great question and a pertinent question for right now as we see bluegrass reaching heights that I think it's never reached before. The music is literally more popular now than ever. And I think some of those bedrock bluegrass fundamentals are the thing that are really resonating with people, because the sort of jam grass scene, for lack of a better term, has been around long enough now that the influence has trickled down. And instead of just a few bands in that space like there were when we started out, there are a ton of bands and there are a ton of people picking up on this music, and there's a ton of new energy coming in, new influences, but also I think a focus on old school bluegrass and some of those elements that make it so profound. You know, the music is not that old. It really was pioneered like in the mid 1940s. And it was just some of the most real, heartfelt music. You know, it had this cultural significance and it was very tied to a place initially. And so there was a cultural importance that way. But musically speaking, oh man, it's just such incredible virtuosic music, the picking, the playing, the way that those early pioneers figured out how to play their instruments, guys like Earl Scruggs, you know, Bill Monroe, of course, and later on like Tony Rice and into the Bela Fleck generation. They all brought so much unbelievable, not just virtuosity, but also real feel to the music. And that's with the with the instruments, but also with the singing. You know, it's just this really, really soulful sound. And then of course the tones of these instruments, you know, these acoustic sounds that are so moving, these roots music instruments, banjo, mandolin, guitar, fiddle, they just have a really evocative sound. So all these things are what put bluegrass on the map back in the day. And, you know, it traveled a weird road to kind of get where it's at now, but now it's reaching more people than ever before. And like I said earlier, I think those elements are part of what's making it so popular. Of course, combined with all these new eclectic influences coming into the music. And it's just an awesome time to be a bluegrass musician and to be a part of this scene.
Yeah, you know, there's this really rich, fertile soil for someone like, you know, Billy Strings to blow up, and also String Dusters and Green Sky, you know, seeing new heights. And I'm curious what you think it is about right now that's kind of led for that.
Well, you got to tip your hat to the bands that paved the way for all of this. And that's Yonder, that's String Cheese, that's Leftover Salmon, Railroad Earth. Like I said earlier, when we were getting going 16 years ago, there weren't a lot of bands playing bluegrass in rock clubs in front of crowds that were dancing. There weren't a lot of bands pushing the boundaries, jamming, and really getting creative with the songs that they were playing, but also speaking mostly in a bluegrass idiom. And those bands taught us everything that we know. Of course, you know, we do our own thing like every band, but we learned and observed what they were doing. I remember going on tour with Yonder back in the day, and the simple details, seeing, you know, how big their crew was, what the night flowed like, what, you know, what the music was presented like on stage. And we saw those guys do something that really opened up our imagination, because we kind of came from a more traditional scene when we started out, again, because there weren't a lot of bands doing this. And we were drawn to bluegrass because of some more traditional sounds. Of course, we loved those second generation, or I guess maybe a little later, third generation pickers. Like I said, Bela, Jerry Douglas, those guys were a huge influence on us. But we also loved old school bluegrass. And we kind of didn't exactly know where we were going at first. And then we learned from seeing these bands that were so influential for us that I mentioned earlier. And that was 16 years ago. And a lot has changed in the time since then. And all along its history, we've seen bluegrass have these sort of brushes with the mainstream. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? You know, Steve Martin and Ed Helms putting bluegrass on a bigger stage. And now we're in one of those unbelievable upswings, because all of the amazing work that those bands did has been around long enough that the influence has seeped in, that new bands have emerged. And that's what has really set the table, not only for us, but all these bands that have come after. And it's like a renaissance going on right now. There's so many amazing bands, so many amazing festivals. This was not going on when we started out. And it's amazing to see. It's helped us out. And it's also been a real honor for us to be a part of that process, because we first and foremost just love this music and are proud to kind of carry the torch in whatever way that we can.
Amen. I love that answer. So, you know, you mentioned traditional elements of bluegrass, and then obviously there's now this more progressive branch. And, you know, beyond the obvious psychedelic sounds and effects, I'm curious, can you talk about some of the new elements of bluegrass music that aren't traditional, but are really finding its way into the genre, and like what those elements are?
Sure. The initial iteration of bluegrass, the forms of the songs were very short. You know, his song was maybe 2.5-3 minutes long, and it started with a blistering banjo kickoff, and then you had, you know, a couple verses, a couple choruses, some real short solos, and you were out. Now we're seeing a lot of extended song forms, and that improvisation is coming in. And of course, that I feel like is all post Grateful Dead. They showed us a way to present music live and to basically go on a journey with the crowd and ride that wave of energy with them to let the music in a live environment reach new heights. And Yonder, they were masters of that. And they still are, you know, they still are doing amazing things, you know, even though they've had some changes. But back in the day when we were touring with them, opening some shows, wow, it really blew our minds to see the way that they were tweaking the music to involve the crowd again, to take things to new heights. So you've got all of that. You got all of that going on. And then of course there's the songwriting factor, because bluegrass, what makes something bluegrass is primarily the picking styles, the playing styles, the way that we sing, the way that we play, the way that we bring the music to life with those specific styles. On banjo, it's the three finger Earl Scruggs style. And we all have our own sort of take on that, but the roles that the instruments play, you know, the guitar plays rhythm, the bass plays the outlines, the chords on the downbeat, you know, those are the stylistic elements that make something bluegrass. And then you've got these new songs, or even say covers of more popular songs, or not, but just not songs that originated in the bluegrass idiom, presented with these playing styles. That to me is really what makes something bluegrass. But the songwriting can be almost anything. So you have all these great new artists who are coming in and who are writing in new and eclectic ways. Paul Hoffman is a great example, great friend of mine. And I have so much respect for Paul, because he is just a phenomenal songwriter. and an artist too, the way that his voice matches his songs and takes everything up a notch in how evocative it is. But they do it with bluegrass instruments. So you've got all these different things coming together at this one time, and they're all a part of what, you know, what's making the music so popular right now. But there's so many people doing it that it really is this kind of wide range of things at this point, and lines are getting a little blurry, you know, what is bluegrass and what might be on the fringe. But to me, we're a bluegrass band. To me, Billy Strings, bluegrass band, you know, Molly Tuttle, bluegrass band, these bands that are getting a lot of notoriety, they're pretty actually squarely within the genre, if you ask me, just bringing new songs in, some twists and turns in the live arrangements, but the way that they're playing their instruments, very much derived from what I consider to be one of the best musical educations you can get, learning old school bluegrass and learning some of that stuff that might seem simple at first, but in fact, this is some of the deepest music there is out there if you really tune into kind of the soul factor that's underneath all that.
Mm. Wow. And you mentioned the Yonder approach, the post-Grateful Dead, taking the crowd on an adventure. I'd love to hear you talk about what you think it is about music made up spontaneously that can just be so powerful.
Oh man, that's where it's at. You know, that's the fun part of a live show. It's the journey. And from the crowd's perspective, they're in the moment and they're seeing something that you can only see there that night. And not to take anything away from like pop artists, say, who perform a very consistent show night to night. And probably that's what their fan base wants, is to hear the music that they know. Our fans and lots of roots music fans, people in and around our scene, they want to see something that's unique to that night. And that's that Grateful Dead thing. That's why they had such a huge crowd following them around, because if you saw the same thing every night, what would be the point of going to 5 shows in a row, 10 shows, the whole tour, whatever it is? They're going because it's something so unique and different every night. So when you bring that energy to the table and you're looking out there and they're looking back, that's a very present synergy that is one of the absolute coolest things that we do. One of the great joys of being in a band like the String Dusters is just getting to go up there and do that every night, see what happens, take the ride with the crowd. And of course, you know, some, in my opinion, some nights are better than others, that they can't all be great. And that's what makes it so unbelievable when you have that payoff. But certainly at various points every night during a show, I feel like something really cool and unique is happening. And again, that's all, if you ask me, post Grateful Dead, they really took that to an extreme without very much precedent. You know, there weren't bands doing that kind of thing before, and they did it like all the way. You know, they showed you where that limit was. So we're all just trying to create our own meaningful and communicative version of that, and that's a work in progress. That we talk about that kind of thing all the time in the band, and we download after shows, you know, oh, that was this really cool thing that we hadn't done before. Or what if we tried using this different jam vehicle or some different chords or a riff, you know, let's check that out and sound check tomorrow. And that's kind of how the art evolves. You can't practice that stuff in a rehearsal. We talk about this sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's all the shows that actually allow us to evolve our sound, because you don't really know if something is hitting without that other participant, and that's the crowd.
Well, if you made it this far, thank you for listening. Just wanna let y'all know we've got these hand-dyed, ice-dyed Weird Music Podcast hoodies and also tees. If you'd like one, let us know. We'd love to get you one. Also wanna give a big shout out to Voodoo Ranger from New Belgium Brewing for sponsoring this podcast. And a big thank you to the geniuses over at Thrax CBD for sponsoring us with their amazing products. Also want to give a big thank you to J&J Distribution, Ohio's premier Delta 8 and CBD wholesale supplier. Retailers, check out their brands Cloud 8, Compassionate Buds, and Zaza. Also big thank you to our local print shop, Franklinton Press. Definitely hit them up for any of your custom merch or custom printing needs. They'll take good care of you. Got links in the description. And yeah, much love, y'all. Now back to the episode.
Do you ever think about, like, for example, with a beautiful climactic section or a section of super intense tension and then the release, like, do you ever think about what's happening in the mind of the listener, like in their mind?
Well, I have, you know, I think about what I've experienced as a listener, and I think that's, you know, that's the best reference that I have. And I didn't start playing banjo until I was 18 years old. So I actually had, like, you know, sort of the first part of my young adult life, or whatever you want to call it, I was just a music fan. I wasn't a musician. I wasn't out there with all this knowledge about what goes into a live show or learning an instrument or any aspect of what we do. And I love that, actually. I didn't start playing as early as a lot of my peers, but it's something that I think about from time to time, the feelings that I had when I was going to shows, when I was just more of a fan. And in a way, I try to recapture that at this point in my life. And when I go see music, I really want to try and hear it with, you know, just a fresh perspective, not something that's colored, like I say, by all this knowledge about what it is to make a career in music. So it's cool for me. I have that reference point. And yeah, I think about what's going on there. I think, like I say, you're tuned into it in the moment, but in some way it's this kind of big mind meld. I hope in some way we're all sort of thinking and feeling similar things as the shape of the jam, the song, whatever it is, rises and falls. But being tuned into that in the moment, and I suppose, you know, trying to create that oneness with the crowd, again, that's become a very big part of what we do. So yeah, that's, in some way, I'd say that's always on our minds.
Jumping to the side just a little bit, I want to talk about you and your creative process. And
yeah,
so obviously you've got a lot going on. You've got your solo banjo thing that I'd love to hear you talk about a little bit down as we continue this interview. But, you know, you've got String Dusters, you've got your podcast, and like with your creative practice, I'd love to hear something you stay away from doing that. And, you know, I talked about this with Paul too, but I'd love to hear your take on, you know, something you avoid doing that you think helps you become successful.
That's a good question. I try not to stay focused on any one thing for too long. For me, like you mentioned earlier, I do a lot of different things, and the podcast has become a big part of what I do. I do a lot of producing records for other bands these days, and of course the String Dusters, and then I've got my solo stuff, my Trad Plus stuff. And I think that variety is something that really keeps the creativity rolling for me, that keeps things fresh. And I've been guilty of breaking this rule, and I think that's why perhaps I'm aware of it. And like a lot of people during the pandemic, I lost some of the context for what it was that I was doing. You know, my life's mission is to play music and see where I can take this. And it's always been done in the context of playing live shows. That's always been sort of the cornerstone of my career. And then that goes away for a long time without any sense of when it's going to come back. And that was a very confusing situation for me. And I remember, and I still, you know, a couple of years later, I find myself kind of breaking this rule of getting like too focused on working on my banjo playing, my technique, and you kind of get in your own head. And this was one of those things that was almost forced upon us, I feel like, with this huge pause in the pandemic, because previously me and so many of my peers we never had a break that was, I mean, I always had like a gig next week at least, you know, or maybe a week or two off, but you just sort of were always on point and in the flow. And this thing that we did that definitely is sort of woven into your identity, your self-image, your sense of who you are, had so much to do with playing live and being sharp for that. And then that goes away. And when it started to come back, I remember feeling kind of disconnected from it in a way that I really had to kind of check out and figure out. And that at times led me to get in my own way, I think, and to work too much on one thing and start thinking too much about one thing. And that's not unusual. And, you know, I've compared notes with other people, and it's interesting how we, you know, how a groove can become a rut, because you're really dialed on something. You're feeling really in tune with it and intuitive in the way that you're expressing yourself. And then if you get too focused on, for me, like the technique of banjo, which is very technique heavy, it can kind of start to point you in the wrong direction. So that's one thing I try to stay away from. And that's why sort of by design, my career has these different aspects that are all very meaningful to me. And I love them, but having them, these different things to do and to really mix it up helps me keep it fresh for sure.
Going deeper down this rabbit hole, like, so you've got your, of course, the String Dusters, then your solo, and you're working on this awesome podcast, but then, you know, you also have your whole life, you know, all the probably like stupid jokes you say to the people you hang out with, whatever. Like, I'm curious how these different buckets of your life kind of inspire each other. For example, your life inspiring your music, and then your music inspiring something to discuss on the podcast, and then how the podcast could inspire, I don't know, a way you approach a jam down the line, like,
sure,
whatever. Like, I'd love to hear you kind of take me into your window with that.
Sure. Well, the podcast has been such an awesome part of my career and something that I've really loved. And as you know, it's a lot of work to have a podcast. And I think to do it well, just like anything, you have to give it a lot of thought. You have to give it a lot of time and energy. It has to be real. It has to be heartfelt. And to create that is a lot of work, is a lot of dedication. And I was working with RJB at Osiris, and they produced my podcast. And I was working with him because RJ's wife is a friend of mine from college. So we've known each other for years. And I was working together with RJ as Osiris was incubating. And I always had this idea to do my own podcast. And I always thought it would be a great outlet for me because, first of all, man, I'm a nerd. You know, I love to learn. I really do. And I love to learn from other people. And then this amazing career that I've been so fortunate to cultivate, it's really unbelievable. And this is, I think, very specific to our amazing bluegrass roots music scene. It's unbelievable how many incredible, talented, intelligent, articulate, soulful people that I've crossed paths with along the way. And I'm always thinking, man, if fans can get to know these artists a little deeper, because I observe this in my career, you know, we don't have enough outlets like this right here today to go under the surface and to explain more deeply all the different aspects of what this life about, what this life is about, what this art is about. And so I got into the podcast because I wanted to help people do that. I wanted to give them an opportunity, you know, and given my knowledge and everything that I know about the career, and just to really dig in deep and let fans get more connected with them. But I also selfishly get to ask all these amazing guests questions that I want to know the answers to. And it's such an amazing opportunity to rap with all these people. And I've learned so much from them, and I've been so inspired from them. I can't think of a single guest who in some way didn't send me back to my banjo or my studio or whatever it is, my life, with something new to think about, to be inspired by. So that's been a huge part of that cycle, if you will. And my solo music is inspired by everything that I love, all these musicians, you know, that I mentioned who are guests in my podcast, and just everything that I listen to. That's my chance to go make the music that's in my head, top to bottom. So the String Dusters is a collaborative, you know, I'm one part of that. And the guys in that band are so amazing. And, you know, talk about inspiration. I mean, they, you know, when you're getting ready for a String Dusters tour, you got to be ready, man. And that's as inspirational as anything right there. You know, that sends me back to my practice routine and to that side of things where you're conceiving, you know, how you want to sound and improving as a musician writer. That really, really motivates me in that area. So there are so many connections, you know, the inspiration is everywhere. And I'm so fortunate for that. You know, it's just my job to kind of channel that into whatever is meaningful for me. And, you know, like I said, that's one of the coolest parts of this job, is just seeing where it can take you, you know, getting all this time to work on music and see, or music or anything, and see where it can take you, see what you can come up with. I love that part.
Diving into something that I think a little more nuanced than most of the topics we discuss here, originality and authenticity, those terms, those can be loaded phrases. Like what do they even mean, to be authentic? Like, what is that? And I'd love to hear from you, like, what do these terms mean to you, and how do you try to apply originality and authenticity into what you do?
Well, yeah, I agree. We hear a lot of originality and especially authenticity these days, but that doesn't make it any less valid. I think you hear it as a buzzword related to, if you want to do something that resonates with people, it's got to be authentic. And I really believe that that's true. And that's, for example, like for me, a great guiding principle with one of the most challenging aspects of my career, which is just playing up to my standards and abilities on stage, which has been a whole crazy journey in and of itself. But, you know, if I am on stage, the main thing that I want to be tuned into is believing in what I'm doing. It's not doing something right. It's not getting this new lick in that I learned last week. It's not even necessarily playing cleanly. I think all of that will come if you really focus on believing in what you're doing. And I swear by that. And I feel like that'll be a lifelong practice, something that, as I mentioned, has really been challenging too, because it is so technique heavy. And there are so many amazing players out there who, oh man, they just talk about inspiration. You know, they push you to try and take this thing as far as you can, be the best that you can. But in the moment, doing something that you really believe in and that is real for you, I think that's the thing that resonates. So this comes in a lot, like when I'm producing. So, you know, I'll work with a band for a few days on pre-production, and then we'll go into the studio. And when we're in the studio, one of my main goals is helping them avoid a pitfall that I know was hard for me earlier in my career, which is when you go into the studio, you think you can reinvent the wheel and do something bigger and better than you've ever done, because we have all of this flexibility as far as recording. But it's not about that. It's about doing you. It's actually about doing the thing that's most quintessentially you, whether that's simple or complex or whatever it is. It's about doing that thing that you've honed, and not, you know, not trying to reach for something new that you have never explored, have never fleshed out. It's really about doing the thing that's authentically you. So I see this as a theme, and I think it's something really meaningful for us to tune into and try to cultivate. And the cool thing about it is that I don't necessarily know what authentic is for someone else, but I know what it feels like for me. And it takes me, in a positive way, away from like these technical things that you can get hung up on, or the mechanics of an instrument, and just takes you into the moment and has you being as present as you possibly can with the listener, or if you're in the studio with the music, with the other musicians, whatever it is. And it sounds easy, but like I said, it's, you know, for me, that's a lifelong practice and something that I'm always working on. And the progress is never linear. And that's an important part. You know, you're going to have times when you feel like you're really on it and you're checking all the boxes. You know, your technique is tight, your playing feels good, you're expressive, you're emoting, and you're authentic. And then you're going to have times where you feel like you've fallen off that mark. And our job is to figure out our own process and get back to that place and then go above that last peak and keep growing. And that's just something very personal for people that bleeds into a lot of, you know, more general things in life and taking care of ourselves and, you know, figuring out what our version of authenticity is. It's something that's very original, I think, to different people. But I do agree that it's something that we should strive for. And I think it's just primarily composed of that being present in the moment and not worrying about what you're trying to achieve in the future, how the past has gone, and being right there with the music, the other musicians, and the crowd.
You bring up like the true you shining through what you're doing and not like reaching for something. And you know, whether it's you as a producer or you as an interviewer or you as a bandmate, like I'm curious what you've learned in regards to leadership, with really helping people kind of come out of their shell and, you know, encouraging their authentic self to flourish. Like, what have you learned through your career about that?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I think and something that I've thought about actually recently, because moving through some of these challenges that the pandemic has presented and getting back to where I feel, again, really confident, really emotive, and just in the moment. It doesn't have to be right, that I'm setting myself up in my preparation to be, you know, to be right there. One thing that I've thought about is the difference between like support and approval, because a lot of times people will give approval, and approval is based on judgment. So that's like if someone plays something that really impresses you, you know, you let them know and you approve of that, versus support, which is really based on empathy. And support is like lifting someone up when they don't really sound like they're on their game. And it's an interesting thing, and you see it in our world. You know, you see people collaborating, you see different versions of this all the time. But one thing that I've really made an effort to do is focus on being supportive and not approving. And that really means, and I'll, don't get me wrong, like when someone's really on their game, I mean, I'm gonna let them know. This isn't about only picking someone up when they're down, but it's about realizing that your judgment is not the important thing. And in fact, judgment in general is gonna take us in the wrong direction when we're talking about really reaching the highest creative and collaborative levels, versus empathy, which is something that comes very naturally to some people, and other people really need to work more on tuning into that. But that's where you really try to feel and understand what someone else is doing. So your judgment, your concept of what is good or not or anything, you set that down, and you realize that if you can feel what someone else is feeling, or understand that you're on a team with them and you're better together, then you can start to really move into this realm of empathy. And from empathy comes support. And when you support someone and really give them encouragement when they're not thriving necessarily, that's a very, very meaningful thing, because when someone's shredding and killing it and you tell them they sound great, well, you know, I mean, we know we sound great. Like, you know, it's always nice to receive a compliment, but you know, we all go through our challenges with this stuff too. And we all have highs and lows. And I think it's pushing someone and supporting them and encouraging them when they need that encouragement versus when they're flying high. That's, to me, a really powerful tool, and it doesn't take much. And I try to bring it to the band, and I try to, you know, definitely to bring it to my role as a producer when I'm working with bands that are primarily younger than I am. And I'm trying to share what I've learned, and I'm trying to get them in their best frame of mind. I'm trying to encourage them. You know, we all have something very genuine and unique and meaningful to say. The art of teasing that out is something that I've definitely thought about. And that's one way that I think that you get at that. And one distinction that's been meaningful for me to take note of, the difference between support and approval. And, you know, there's a time for both. They're both very powerful tools, but one, I think, comes much more easily, like I say, to some people than others. So we need to cultivate that. We need to practice that. We need to tune into it. And if we can, wow, the ability to help others raise their game. You know, we think so much about ourselves and how can I do the best that I can, but think about how much power you hold in this little moment where you can encourage someone when they need it and what that can do for them. You know, that's really a powerful tool.
I love it. You mentioned highs and lows, and, you know, being on a team, being in a band, touring the country, like, I'm sure, you know, your bandmates, you may experience like them maybe going through a great time, but also yourself, like, you know, I imagine in the past you've been on the road and maybe you've been going through kind of like a gray patch mentally. I'm curious, like, what you've learned, whether it's speaking about how other people can kind of be there for you, and also how you've learned to be there for others about kind of getting out of a rut when life seems gray.
Well, that's that support thing, you know, and that's tuning into and actually caring about someone else, because there is a difference between saying the right thing and having the feeling to back it up, and people can tell, and that's your intuition at work. And we all have that. But when you know people really well, and of course we choose our close people in our lives, our partners, our close friends, our collaborators, they can tell what you've got going on. So I think really digging into the practice of finding empathy, again, it's a practice. And that's just been a theme for everything that I feel like I've encountered challenges. My whole process with improving is this idea of practice, because we never arrive at some end point in this journey. Everything is going to continue to evolve as our careers, as our lives go along. So when we hit adversity, for example, a great chance to practice taking it in the direction that we want to go. And sometimes we do great, and sometimes we totally suck at that. And that's how you learn. That's how you evolve. But to me, that's a really helpful mindset. It helps me to not get overwhelmed by something if it feels really daunting to me. Is I just think to myself, well, here's another rep. Here's another chance to practice how I want to take on, how I want to assess a situation like this. So that goes for the support factor too, because, you know, we're all out there, egos charging, trying to make our mark in the world, surrounded by people who are overachievers, who are total badasses. I mean, that can get intimidating, you know, and in the midst of all that activity, of all that energy, to genuinely cultivate a feeling of empathy and then extend that into an energy of support, it just takes practice. So I would say to people, you know, it's not this binary thing. It's not something that you suddenly turn on, you know, and it's going to be a different experience with every person that you share that feeling with. So just get in there. And again, this is such a, you know, you can really extrapolate this out to a much wider, you know, worldview, life view. Just get in there and try your best with your best intentions, and you're going to have more chances at this thing. So this is just one rep in the art of tuning into that skill and actually feeling the emotion that should be behind the words. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes. I love. Yeah. I mean, what you just said is, like you mentioned, we all feel this intuition, but we don't necessarily all call it out that we have this guts. Man, I really appreciate you bringing that up. This has been awesome. Let's have a quick round of applause, clap track for Chris. Man, thank you so much for joining me here and taking the time.
Yeah, thanks, Cam. I really enjoyed it, man.
So if you listen this far, we've got links in the description. Check out String Duster's most recent release, Grammy-nominated album, Toward the Fray. And we got a link to Chris's podcast below and his trance banjo solo project.
Yeah.
Be sure to check that out. Chris, you want to give us a little description on what we can expect with that?
Yeah, trance banjo, as I said earlier, that's the solo side of my music. And, you know, it's been a few different things. I have two albums, Interference and then Trance Banjo, both under the name Trad Plus, or now it's Chris Pandolfi Presents Trad Plus on Spotify, just to kind of get it all under one roof. But I love tons of music and I love to work in my studio and get creative. So it's beats, it's a lot of analog synths, it's strings, it's virtual instruments, it's stuff that I primarily play here right through those doors in my studio. And there are a few guests. I've worked a lot with a great drummer, my man Nick Falk, who plays with His Golden Messenger. And it's my chance to explore everything that I'm into. So you'll hear some different flavors between those two albums. But if you like to get out there, or if you like banjo music, you know, there's an interesting fusion of a lot of different things on those records. So check them out.
Amen. I look forward to that as well. Chris, man, I just got a couple more questions for you, but thanks again for joining me. This has been one of my favorite interviews, I think, thus far, for sure. What would you say has been the thing in your life that's been the greatest teacher for you?
Man, these are some big questions. I like it. Well, I've had a few music teachers who have been really influential, and they come to mind. I feel like if I had to pick one thing that was really the strongest teacher, the thing that has pushed me in the most meaningful directions, it's just the adversity that I've come up against. And, you know, I know that it will come again, and I feel a little more prepared for it every time. But if you can channel adversity into meaningful lessons that are specific to you and not give up, because so many people do give up, you know, they come to that point of adversity, that point where they might question themselves, that point where they might not know what's going on. And that scares them away. But people who persevere, and that includes anyone across any discipline, they've been through adversity and they've turned that into something meaningful for them. And for me, that's something I'm always really focused on. And I know there are some huge lessons I've learned with music, with collaborating with life across all the different disciplines that I take on. And they've all come from hard times and finding my way out of them.
What do you think young you would say to you now?
Man, young me would just be so fired up about everything that's going on right now, which is awesome. I have a little phrase that I love to say sometimes, which is like, you know, if something really cool is going on, or if like Bela Fleck is sitting in with the String Dusters, I'm like, oh man, don't tell 18-year-old me, he couldn't take it. I think that's a really cool question, because there are parts of young me around the time that I started playing and when I was really getting into it before, but before I like, you know, went to music school or anything like that, like I was just starting to play in bands. And music is so pure at that point. Life is so pure at that point. And I think in addition to being excited, I think young me would say, you know, don't forget that raw excitement, that raw passion that sometimes can get buried under this mountain of expectations. It just happens. You know, it's just life rolls on, big opportunities are coming your way. You've worked your ass off to create those opportunities, but you got to do good, you know? So you think about these things and you have to figure out how to keep all these things in balance. But when you're starting out, there's a passion, there's a freedom, and there's a lack of awareness of what's going on around you that I know for me now later in my career, I sort of have had to like recultivate some of those things. And I've thought about that. I think back to what music felt like. So in essence, I've thought about sort of what, how young me would look at what's going on and what perspective I'd bring to the table. And I think it would really revolve a lot around just that raw passion and that lack of awareness and just that ability to stay in the moment and super excited about what's going on. You know, that's where the money's at, you know, and it can get away from you a little, but a great lesson from early on for sure.
And what would you say is the personality trait that you most admire in other people?
You know, I really admire, and this ties into a lot of the stuff that we were talking about with empathy and support, but I really admire people who genuinely lift other people up and who don't seem too hung up on what it is they're doing and have that energy and bandwidth and genuine ability to lift someone else up effortlessly on stage, off stage. I've seen it happen in very meaningful ways in both places. But I really admire people who treat others well and who lift other people up. And I think that is a mark of something. There's a selflessness there. There's that natural part of empathy. And it helps you not just tune into those people, but I really think that ties into the bigger picture, the bigger ability to connect with the crowd and have this less be about the trip that you're on and just as much about how other people are not necessarily perceiving it or judging it, but being a part of it. You know, it's one of the little mantras that I remind myself of before I go on stage, if I'm trying to kind of get my head straight about the show or whatever, is that they want to love what you're doing. They're not out there to judge you negatively. And, you know, this is a very known school of thought, the Caruso method, I think it's called, and a classical musician who does a meditation before the show. And she, she sits backstage and just says, you know, I love the audience over and over and embodies it. And they love me back, you know, or something like that. And it helps to get you in that frame of connection with the people who are taking in your art. So that's something I look up to. I try to create myself. And I think, again, something that we can practice and ultimately over the course of our lives, something that can really open a lot of doors, not just in our career, not just in music, but in our connection with all type of people and just sort of in your life in general.
Well, Chris, man, like, you know, yes, you Grammy winning artist, like rock star climbing the mountaintop. But with your podcast, man, I definitely would say you absolutely do that.
Oh, know, thanks,
for others, man.
Thanks, man. How
would you
that.
Answer? Yeah, of course, man. How would you answer that question in terms of the besides that? What personality trait do you think you most admire in yourself?
Well, I know that I have a lot of perseverance, and I know that I don't give up. And that's something I also really admire in others. And I get a lot of inspiration from athletes, and I'm a big sports fan. And so much of what I love is this super high level performance and the things that people do to overcome the adversity to really unlock their full potential. And in sports, it's a very similar thing. You know, we have these finely tuned skills that, you know, that not only need to be totally on point, but also in front of tons of people when the pressure is on. And I always look up to people in whatever they're doing who really persevere. And for me, that's another thing that when I'm struggling, I know that I can fall back on, and I've cultivated this and I've really tried to practice this, is I can really say to myself, and I have many times, as ridiculous as it seems, is like, well, you know what? I may totally suck today, but you know what? I'm never giving up. So this journey is going to twist and turn on down the road wherever it takes me. And when I get, you know, to where I need to be for that time, because again, you know, you're always moving, but when I'm finding myself, you know, cultivating a good flow for a tour or whatever it is, it's because when I'm struggling with something, I know that I'll keep moving. And that perseverance is huge. That's that thing that gets people over that hump that keeps most people out, you know, and such a motivating factor for me is just that engine inside, you know, just always saying to yourself, no matter what happens, I may be totally off the mark and I may be totally lost on my mission, but you know, this is my mission. So I'm going to keep going and I'm not going to give up. And it served me really well, you know. And you look out at other musicians and you always think like, oh my God, they have it so easy. You know, they make it sound so easy, but you would be blown away by the consistency across probably all genres and fields, even about high level performers, high level achievers have all gone through their major ruts, and it's figuring out how to get out of that. And that perseverance, that, you know, that's a hallmark quality, I think, of greatness. And even if you don't achieve greatness, it's a hallmark quality of contentment, because that's your way of saying, you know, I'm gonna keep moving no matter what. That's something that's up to me. That's my decision. No one else, you know, people may judge me in whatever aspect of my life, but this is something that I've cultivated that no one can take away. And it's something that I've definitely found a lot of solace in along the way, and something that's just helped me out.
Man, this has been unreal. This has been epic. Chris, man, thank you so much, dude. I got one final question for you.
Hit me.
Wrapping up. If you had to recommend three songs by another group, by somebody else, three random non-String Duster songs as a way to get to know you, what three would you pick?
One of them has to be a Bela Fleck song, because he is, you know, the reason that I play. And I'm going to go with the song Up and Running from Tales from the Acoustic Planet, Volume 1. Not only has it really been a big influence on my banjo playing, but also just the recontextualization of the banjo. Like, that is such a cool track, still basically acoustic, but with oboe and with percussion. So that's one. Then I'm going to have to go with a track from a dude named Washed Out. I think Feel It All Around would probably be my favorite track. I think that's sort of his most popular one, but he's got a lot of good stuff. But he's really influenced me in my work as a producer, especially on my solo stuff. He's got this really like dreamy sound with all these cool sort of like synths and pads kind of interacting in the background, cool beats. I think for my last influential tune, I just have to be real and we just have to get a Fish jam in there, because I love Fish. I'm throwing like sand into the hat or like a really good like 2001, because Fish,
I love it.
I love Fish, and I was so into them when I was getting into music. And even though my whole journey with music sort of took this big left turn into bluegrass and then into the String Dusters, the influence of that Fish stuff, because, you know, they're of course one of the primary post Grateful Dead torchbearers. And in terms of being in the moment with their audience, there's no one that's better. You know, maybe they've been equaled but never surpassed, in my opinion. I mean, they do something so unique and cool, and they've got all these musical elements that I love. So so yeah, I would throw a 2001 in there to go along with my Washed Out track and my Bela Fleck track. And I think between those three, you know, you get a good cross section of what's influenced my music, not only with the Dusters, but with my Trad Plus stuff as well.
Hell yeah. Well, Chris, man, huge round of applause. You listening this far, Toward the Fray, check it out. And Inside the Musician's Brain, Trad Plus, got all the links in the description. And yeah, much love, man.
All right. Thanks so much, Cam.